Welcome to the PrevMed Health Podcast with Dr. Brewer, your go-to source for heart attack and stroke prevention. And I am your host, Ford Brewer. Each week, we dive deep into the latest trends, expert insights, and practical tips to help you decrease your risk of heart attack and stroke. We discuss plaque reversal, insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, cholesterol, supplements, medications, and so much more. So sit back, relax, and have this journey to a long and healthy life together.
If you're thinking about baby aspirin for heart attack prevention, you should watch this video first. In our last video about baby aspirin and heart attack prevention, there were a lot of comments, and those comments made two things very, very clear. The first is you're very frustrated with media interpretation of guidelines, or maybe I should say misinterpretation. That's more accurate. The second thing that you made very, very clear is most of you are still taking baby aspirin for heart attack and stroke prevention. And that's a good thing. I took it for years to prevent my own heart attack. Now, here's one of the major problems. Again, media, whether you're talking about New York Times or YouTube, has been misinterpreting the baby aspirin guidelines from day one, mostly because they don't know how to assess risk properly. So here's what we're going to do. We'll go back to the studio. We'll give you my story. We'll also give you the reasons why I did what I did. Then we'll give you the evidence about it. And at the end of the day, you can make your own choices about what's best for you. We'll also give you a little bit of bonus on how and why so many media misinterpret the baby aspirin guidelines.
Before you stop taking that baby aspirin, you better watch this video. I took baby aspirin for over 5 years. I'm 67 years old now. And so far, aspirin has helped me avoid a heart attack. But about 2 years ago, mainstream media started saying, look, stop taking that baby aspirin. It causes bleeding. But still, about half of the doctors continue to recommend it for their patients. In fact, 57%, whether you're in the U.S. or in Europe. So I can guess you might be thinking, wait a minute, this is crazy. Why can't doctors and all these experts get it together? Why can't they just say the same thing? Should I take baby aspirin to prevent a heart attack or not? That's the real question. I'll tell you, all you need to know so you can make your own informed decision. Most of it you probably know already. We've seen it multiple times on things like my previous aspirin video. The bottom line is you cannot outrun, outprescribe, or even out aspirin a lifestyle problem. So most of this is lifestyle. There's a group of people that even with a healthy lifestyle should consider continuing to take that baby aspirin. And in reality, there's far less argument among the experts or debate among the experts about that. It has to do with whether you have cardiovascular disease already. And most of us that do don't know it. I was in that group. When I was 57 years old, I found out that despite my healthy habits, I was still developing arterial plaque. That's when I started taking aspirin. Remember, back in the day, every doctor said you should take aspirin no matter what when you turn age 60. I was 57, so I hadn't started it yet. But again, I found out I already had plaque in my arteries. That means I was already a cardiovascular patient. This was not primary prevention anymore. It was secondary prevention of a disease that already existed. So even though I don't agree that everybody should take aspirin just because they turned 60, in fact, I haven't recommended that. Not only the past 2 years, I haven't recommended that for over 10 years. If you don't have plaque, you don't need aspirin. Now, if you do have plaque, you should take a baby aspirin. Again, that was me 10 years ago. So I started taking a baby aspirin, 81 milligrams every morning. And if you're in Canada, some places in Europe, some places in South America, it may be 100 milligrams. Just look for anything between 75 and 110 milligrams of aspirin. No, you don't need the full 360 milligram dose of full aspirin. You know, aspirin's really good to decrease the risk of heart attack because it's an antiplatelet medication. It makes the platelets less sticky. It's not really an anticoagulant. It's not like Coumadin, Eliquis, Xarelto. Why are we against platelets? I mean, what is it doing about platelets? Here's the thing. You got to understand a little bit more about how heart attacks actually happen. Most people think that heart attacks, that plaque lines the inside of the artery wall, and a heart attack is when some of that plaque breaks off, that waxy stuff. Mm-mm. That's not at all what happens. First of all, what happens is usually it's due to prediabetes. There's tons of us that have it and don't know it, or even full-blown diabetes. That high blood sugar or high insulin burns the inside of our artery wall, the lining, what we call the intima. It burns that lining and causes what we call inflammation. That inflammation results in small, dense LDL seeping through that lining and getting stuck in the artery wall, inside the wall of the artery. Now, our immune system's continuing to try to attack that plaque to get it out of there because it knows it's not supposed to be there. It gets the job partially done. It makes the plaque soft, and that's the danger. Soft plaque is like mucus or snot. And like mucus or snot, it's full of immune cells and enzymes that the immune cells uses to digest that plaque, to dissolve it. That inflammatory goo, that inflammatory snot can cause a clot. So if that soft plaque goes back through the lining of the artery wall and touches the blood, it can form a clot. The clot is what causes the heart attack or stroke. If that clot's big enough and it goes to the heart, bam, that's the heart attack. If it goes to the brain and it's big enough, kaboom, that's the stroke. You know, aspirin does have its problems. It's not the safest drug in the world. In the U.S., it's over-the-counter. I suspect if the FDA in the U.S., the Food and Drug Administration, if it actually reviewed aspirin again, it might make aspirin a prescription drug. You think that's silly? Look over in Europe. In Europe, it is a prescription drug in all but two countries. What's so challenging about aspirin? Why is it dangerous? What's the side effect? Bleeding. It can be as mild as some skin bruises. It can cause some stomach ulcers or bleeding from the colon. But it can even cause bleeding in the brain, what we call a bleeding type of stroke. So that's not pretty. That is dangerous. So why would I even consider, why would doctors even consider baby aspirin that could cause this for their patients for heart attack? Well, let's get back to my story and we'll cover that. Fortunately, I didn't develop any of those, but I was worried about it. I even thought about not taking the aspirin because of that risk. It's real. But I'm glad I didn't stop taking the baby aspirin. A few months after I found out that I had plaque, I was looking for, why did I have plaque? I found out that I had prediabetes, almost full-blown diabetes. Believe it or not, even though I was thin, my BMI was 22, my blood glucose reached more than 180 milligrams per deciliter many times. In fact, over 200 a couple of times when I ate too much rich carb-laden food. So yes, it turned out that I had prediabetes, and in some definitions you could even say maybe full-blown diabetes, but a mild case of it. At least a mild case of diabetes. But a mild case of diabetes is like a major case of prediabetes and, most of all, cardiovascular risk. That's when I learned that the major problem causing heart attacks is not really cholesterol. I'm not going to go down that bunny hole today, but, and you can go to a couple of our other videos where we talk about cholesterol. But the major problem is insulin resistance or prediabetes, diabetes, also known as metabolic disease. Now let's go back and ask the question, wait a minute, this is a video about aspirin, my aspirin story. What does prediabetes, metabolic disease, have to do with aspirin? Well, again, remember what we said just a minute ago. Metabolic disease causes cardiovascular inflammation, like setting your arteries on fire. That, in turn, increases the amount of arterial plaque buildup, and that means more risk of clots. Aspirin decreases that risk. I'm not the only one saying that. Even the American Academy of Family Practitioners said this 14 years ago, if you have diabetes, you should consider taking baby aspirin, period. American Academy of Family Practitioners. Now, they're not clear about prediabetes, and unfortunately, most doctors are not clear about prediabetes. Most of them can't even diagnose it, but we'll talk about that a little bit more deeply in a few minutes. To me, insulin resistance, prediabetes, diabetes, all are basically the same disease process and therefore give you the same similar risk. Not only did I have arterial plaque, I had very significant prediabetes. There is no way I was going to stop taking aspirin at that point. And that's what I did for about 5 years. But when I was 62, I developed another problem. I started feeling a fish flopping in my chest. This was like, I woke up at like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. I had already suspected that I had a problem, atrial fibrillation. I had gotten one of those heart monitors. At that time, the one I got was called iCardia. I put it on and yes, I had atrial fib. Heart rate 150, irregular, and what the doctors call irregular heartbeat. What's the problem with atrial fibrillation? Why are we going down that bunny hole? Atrial fibrillation is a heart rhythm disorder where the atria, the upper chambers of the heart, move randomly. When that happens, the blood can pool in the atria. That causes clots as well. And those clots can go to the brain and cause strokes. So here's why we're mentioning atrial fib in an aspirin video. I was taking aspirin. Aspirin's a blood thinner, right? Well, yes and no. Aspirin's an antiplatelet. It doesn't stop clots from forming in the atria with atrial fib. They don't require platelets. So at that point, that meant aspirin did not work for my increased risk of stroke. You see, if you have atrial fib, you've got 8 times increased risk of stroke. And as a matter of fact, you look at the data, you look at the evidence, it's really clear. Aspirin can prevent heart attacks, but it does not prevent strokes with atrial fib. I had to take something else. I had to take a real blood thinner. I switched to Eliquis. You may have heard of it. Eliquis, Xarelto. They're called NOAC, N-O-A-C. Novel or new oral by mouth anticoagulants, NOAC. I did this to prevent AFib related clots, and that will prevent heart attacks as well. In fact, you shouldn't take aspirin and these medications together unless you've had some specific types of events or procedures. Now, let me guess what you're thinking now. This is confusing. Should I take aspirin or not? That's all I wanted to know. Here's what I would do. If I had plaque, even if I was 40 years old, I'd start taking baby aspirin every day or every other day. If I had prediabetes, even if I was age 40, I would take baby aspirin. And you think, well, there's not many people that are age 40 that have plaque or prediabetes. Hang on, we're going to get there. In fact, let's go there right now. If you're thinking, I'm 40, I don't have plaque, and I don't have diabetes. Well, look at this. At age 30, about 12% of men have plaque. This is the calcium distribution in men by age. So go get a coronary artery calcium score if you're 40 and you think you don't have plaque and you haven't had one. Look at the numbers here. By the time you're age 30, over 10% of us have plaque. This is men. You have calcium, you have plaque. Well, let me say this. By age 35, over 10% of us have plaque. By age 45, over half of men have cardiovascular plaque. So let's go back to prediabetes for a second. You'll be surprised to know that half of American adults have prediabetes. And the ones that have it don't know it. And I don't mean just prediabetes. I mean insulin resistance, prediabetes, or full-blown diabetes. And let me clarify that, too. I don't mean half of American adults starting at age 60. I mean 52% of U.S. adults starting at age 18 years old. And it gets more prevalent, more common with age. By age 60, again, over two-thirds of us have prediabetes. So if you're a boomer in the U.S. and wondering, do I have diabetes or prediabetes? A boomer? Come on. The first major risk factor for heart attack and stroke. The reality is this. In the words of Clint Eastwood in the movie Dirty Harry,
you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, punk?
Most of us have it by that point. Why did 90% of us with prediabetes and diabetes not know it? Well, probably the biggest problem is our doctors, because 3/4 of our doctors don't know how to diagnose it. This study from Johns Hopkins by Singh and Associates demonstrated that 3/4 of family practitioners, internists, and even cardiologists, the doctors we depend on to tell us if we have cardiovascular risk, heart attack risk, they don't even know how to diagnose metabolic disease, prediabetes, diabetes. You don't believe me? Try this with your doctor. Ask him or her, how do they diagnose prediabetes? He or she will probably say hemoglobin A1C, or just A1C for short. If they do, tell them, maybe go get another doctor, but your probability of getting one that knows more is not that good yet. Just tell them. Go ahead and educate them. Say, nope, the American Association of Clinical Endocrinologists says that's not a good way to diagnose prediabetes. It's a hemoglobin. Why do they say that? Because it's a hemoglobin test. Things like liver disease, kidney disease, even your genetics can change how you react to that. As Jesus, Dr. Vega on our show has shared about his own personal story, his hemoglobin A1C was in the low fours, like 4.5 or less, at a time when he had prediabetes. That's not a good test. That's why 90% of us that have problems, prediabetes, diabetes, don't even know it. We're at much higher risk for cardiovascular disease, for heart attack, than we ever thought. We don't know that we have prediabetes or even diabetes. Here's the other major risk factor that we have and we don't know. Most of us already have cardiovascular plaque, plaque in our arteries, and yes, we don't know it. Now look at this. This is the distribution of calcium scores in men by age. As you can see, by age 30, over 10% of men already have plaque in their arteries. By age 45, over half of us have plaque. Now, if you're a 40-year-old and you're saying, I don't have plaque or diabetes, we'll get to that in just a minute. This is the key to the whole aspirin story. By age 50, most men have not only metabolic disease, prediabetes, diabetes, they also have plaque in their arteries. They are a cardiovascular patient. This is no longer primary prevention, preventing a disease that hasn't started. This disease has already started, and unfortunately, you don't know it because your doctor doesn't know it. Since lifestyle is even more important than aspirin, this is also the big lifestyle story, too. This is why Most men have very serious cardiovascular disease already by age 50 and do not know it. And women are about a decade behind. So women, don't think it's just the men. By the way, remember that we mentioned that 57% of high-risk patients in both the U.S. and Europe. As you can see, that's probably nowhere near enough now that you begin to realize how many of us actually have cardiovascular disease already and don't know it. But at least doctors are noticing that people do have some cardiovascular disease risk, and they're recommending aspirin. The U.S. Preventive Services Task Force didn't say, don't take aspirin for secondary prevention. They said, if you already have disease process, you should take baby aspirin. So, many doctors, like me, are saying that the presence of plaque and prediabetes is actually cardiovascular disease. So, this is no longer primary prevention, it's secondary prevention of a disease process that has already started. What are you thinking now? Are you thinking, well, but wait a minute, aspirin's a terrible medication. I mean, I don't want to take something that can actually even cause a stroke. It causes bleeding, and a lot of people are even allergic to it. If you have bleeding issues or you're allergic to it, just don't take it. You shouldn't. The risk is too great. But if you have cardiovascular risk, especially if you're a 50-year-old man, and you think you don't have plaque, you think you don't have prediabetes, if you haven't gotten a CIMT, a CT angiogram, a calcium score, if you haven't gotten used a CGM, continuous glucose monitor, if you haven't had a Kraft insulin survey, please consider getting that done. I am begging you. Please consider getting those things done. At least enough of those to understand, to make sure that you don't have plaque or prediabetes. Let me guess the next thing you might be thinking. Aspirin? Do I have to take it every day? I've heard that you can take it every other day or three times a week. Yes, you can. I don't entirely recommend it, but yes, you can. Aspirin effects can start 48 hours and last for up to 7 days. So aspirin can be taken every other day. It impacts a thing in the platelets called thromboxane, and that impact lasts more than just a day. Some people even take aspirin once a week. It has been documented to have some effect there. Again, if you're thinking, well, I just don't want to take it. I'm concerned about bleeding issues. Maybe you have allergies or have bleeding issues. Is there a natural alternative? Well, of course. And as we've said from the beginning, and we will continue to say, aspirin is nothing compared to lifestyle. If you have too much body fat, too little muscle, you need to concentrate on that first and foremost. But there are other things that we know we need to do. Proper resistance training, high intensity interval training, proper diet. You cannot out-supplement or out-prescribe or out-aspirin a diet. Now, there are other popular natural remedies. If that's what you're getting at, yes, cayenne pepper, nattokinase, ginger, turmeric, garlic, even willow bark. Now, I got to go down a quick bunny hole on willow bark. You know the willow bark story. 4,000 years ago, the ancient Sumerians discovered that boiling willow bark left in the liquid a substance that made people feel better. It would decrease fever even. And it was not until a couple of hundred years ago, maybe 100 years ago, Bayer had a chemist who began to look at willow bark and found that it was acetyl salicylic acid. You may have heard that term, acetyl salicylic acid. And guess what? That was the beginning of Bayer aspirin. So aspirin originally came from willow bark, a natural product that was known to help. And Big Pharma's been doing that ever since, co-opting natural remedies and making tons of money off of it. Now, all of these things that we just described, nattokinase, turmeric, garlic, willow bark, they've been shown to provide some benefits. But unfortunately, none of them are as good as aspirin. Some doctors will recommend other medications like Plavix. Now, that's another type of blood thinner, and usually they're not going to recommend that unless you've already had a heart attack or a stent or some other type of event. Those are as good as aspirin at preventing a heart attack. They can also be a little bit more of a challenge in terms of bleeding issues. The novel oral anticoagulants like Eliquis and Xarelto, maybe not so much. They're not quite the bleeding risk. Many people would say they're safer than aspirin, but the problem with the NOACs is they're incredibly expensive.
We hope you found today's episode informative and useful. Be sure to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on all our latest episodes. For more information about becoming a patient or participating in our exclusive events, visit PrevMedHealth.com or call 859-721-1414.